All right. Everyone ready?
Yes.
Yep.
All right, we're going to go ahead and dive right in here. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Narnia Web Council. I am your host, Rillian. We have a really fun group of people here tonight to discuss everything that's been happening with the trailer and just the madness that's been happening over the news and the forums. And well, let me introduce all our guests. First of all, we have Jim Fan. Jim Fan, welcome back.
Thank you very much.
And we also have Warrior for Jesus. Hello, Warrior.
Hello, everyone.
And tonight we have a very special guest, someone who has not ever been on the podcast, and it is our very own Tyrion.
Wahoo!
Woo-hoo! Yay!
This is just too cool.
Well, hi, everybody. I'm really glad to make it on. I realize it's been a long time,
years.
And I've wanted to be on the podcast and just haven't had the opportunity. So I'm just really excited to be here with you guys. I love listening, and this is pretty exciting.
Yeah, this is gonna be cool. We've got quite a bit to discuss here, just with the everything that's happening with the trailer and let's go ahead and jump right in. We're going to talk about the trailer. And so, first of all, if you guys are trying to avoid spoilers, sorry. This is going to be about...
Yeah, this is not the podcast.
This is not the podcast to listen to. And then we're going to basically be talking afterwards about kind of how we're feeling about it. So, first of all, general impressions of the trailer, just as you... before we start to talk about some of the nitty-gritty, we won't be too detailed, but how did you guys enjoy it compared to the first trailer? Let's say we start with you, Jim Van.
It's kind of mixed. The parts I love a lot more than the first trailer. The parts I'm horrified about, I'm a lot more horrified about than the first trailer. So it's, like, good and bad, just... a lot more.
Okay. Warrior, what do you think? How did you feel about it?
I really enjoyed some parts of it. I thought it was much better construction than the previous two trailers. Less cliche too, but it did introduce some of the elements that we Narnia fans aren't so keen on. Yeah, I guess it was a bit of a mix for me too, in that I really enjoyed some elements, but some other elements just confused me or I didn't see why they were necessary. But, overall, I thought it was good, but I'm not sure how it will go as an adaptation.
So, Tyrion, your first opinion that you get to express on the podcast, what did you think of the trailer?
Well, you know what? I gotta say, I liked it. I mean, yeah, there's parts, obviously, that you think, oh boy, you know, where are they going with this? This looks a little not quite like the Don Treader that I've read. But I was so excited by certain things and so just thrilled to see the Don Treader. I mean, when Caspian says, "Behold, our long lost king and queen, or our whatever the phrase he uses," and they all bow down. I'm getting goosebumps. And then, how wonderful is that scene where just the little clip we get of Eustace saying, "Where in the blazes am I?" And the Minotaur says, "You're on the Dawn Treader."
I think it made it pretty clear. I just love Will Poulter's Eustace, so that was really good to see.
Oh yeah, I mean it's so good. I think if this part of the Dawn Treader is this good, I don't see how the movie could be a disappointment. Even if there's parts at the end where, you know, maybe the story gets a little off track, we're still getting to see the Dawn Treader. We're getting to be in Narnia again. And I mean, I guess the bottom line is I'm pretty much of an
optimist
when it comes to these
honestly,
movies.
Honestly, it'd probably be
good
to have an optimist running the website rather than someone who's, you know, forget this series, click. No more NarniWeb. It is dead. Well, just yeah, brief exactly. on my opinion. I'm kind of pulling from what Jim Fan and Warrior already said. Yeah, there was parts that I just, you know, looking at it on the downside, I thought, oh, man, this, I just can't believe this. It just looks, some parts I just think, what, this looks like a disaster. I'm in a much darker place. Actually, I think maybe in some ways in Clumpuddle. Who'd have thunk it? Yeah, I know, but it is, I wow. know. I'm kind of with you, Warren. Wow. I think just as a trailer, I thought, hey, you know, this is, you know, a pretty fun looking trailer. I mean, it's the kind of trailer that, if I had never read the books, would make me more interested in seeing the movie, certainly more than the first one. The first one, I think if I'd never read the books, I thought, I'm never, yeah, I don't think I'd want to see this movie necessarily. It doesn't seem my cup of tea if I just saw the first trailer and hadn't read the books. But here I thought, okay, you know, this is actually, it is a well done trailer. And it was nice to hear Harry Gregson Williams' theme coming in.
Yes,
I like that.
It sure was. But,
well, let's get into the trailer, right. And let's talk like briefly. I'm going to kind of decide how we segment it here. The first portion where we still see them in our world. I'll just say off the bat, the first part of the trailer, I love. I don't have really any complaints, very many anyway, with the first part of the trailer. And it sounds like, and we can kind of get into just their, you know, them being on the Don Treader here. Will Poulter looks fantastic. And I am, I know a NarniWeber who I will not name, but he's not even, I don't think, going to see the movie. He's just so, yeah, well, he's,
I think I know who you're talking about.
He's not even going to see the movie, I don't think. And, but I said, look, I'm going to see this. If for nothing else, I'm going to see Will Poulter. I think he's going to be a fantastic, Eustace, but,
yes.
Oh, people are going to come around. They'll come around. How is it going to get to be Christmas and you can't go see this movie? I mean, come on.
There's going to be just a little bit of Narnia in you. I mean, there's going to be a little bit of it that you can love. Just a little bit. Just at least $10 worth that you're going to love.
The best performance of Eustace. That was it.
Yeah. I mean, but it looks fantastic. My cinematography, visually, this looks amazing. I can't get over the way it looks. I mean, I'm going to go to town when I get the caps for this. This is going to, like, make my day, my life.
I will say, I do like to work with. I like a lot of the shots, the composition. I don't like the digital film. I'm just not much of a digital film guy. I'm more of a traditional, old school nerd in that respect, I suppose. But
yeah,
compare the look and feel of Star Wars Episode 1 with Star Wars Episode 2. Oh boy, okay, never mind.
I've never seen either.
Well, the thing is, I can't say, oh, go see them. I can't say that to you. I can't say that to anyone with the human decency. digital film there's less distortions, there's less of a grainy effect, but it just doesn't really feel, I don't know, it feels kind of two-dimensional to me sometimes. It doesn't, maybe, I don't know, it just...
Less realism, maybe.
I thought the whole thing was that it was, like, more realism, like when I look at film compared to like a shot out of my video camera, one looks kind of like real life and one kind of looks like really, really nice real life. So maybe digital doesn't have the bit of the sheen.
Film still camera to a really nice digital film camera or still camera, you know, there's just a different kind of look to how they get it. But that's neither here nor there. I mean, we do see a good bit of, I'm going to kind of categorize here, like up until, you know, okay. Well, I'm just going to say in the trailer, up until the White Witch, What are some of your thoughts? I'm trying to think of how to balance this out. Why don't we say Jim Fan, then Warrior, then Tyrion, and then I'll give my I'm trying to balance it out here, up and down, as opposed to really polarizing here, but. And Jim Van, ladies first. I mean, we see a lot. We see great stuff with Don Treader. We see Ramandu's daughter. We see Corey Arkin. What are some of your thoughts?
And then you see the white.
We're not talking about that quite yet.
Okay, not yet. So, like, the part.
Kind of, yeah. Okay, you can talk about seeing the White Witch in Corey Arkin's whatever. I guess that's.
Well.
His lair.
Like, I don't like the White Witch. That's not what I'm trying to say. I said I like everything. I mean, everything looks good. There's nothing I can really nitpick, complain about. It seems a little slapsticky with Eustace and the Minotaur, but I know they're just choosing bits and pieces, and I have faith that the movie is not going to be completely like that. What else?
Well, we have some of the dialogue. We can talk here about the dialogue if we want.
Could.
I mean, you have. What do you think of Ramandu? Like, what do you think of what Ramandu's daughter says? And we have the.
Oh, that annoys me so bad. I mean, I like. You know, yeah. So, like, that it just annoys me. It looks more like a Disney film than the Disney films ever did. It just does. That annoys me.
I have more to say
me.
On that later, but.
Oh my.
Well, I am also, if I can just kind of jump in here, I mean, if I were kind of sum this up, like, I'm looking at some stuff. Okay, for one thing, there's this one shot, you know, we have the Dawn Treader. I love the look of the Dawn Treader. I like the look of the lilies. I like the look of the wave. There's a lot aesthetically that I love about this film. And some people they think that Mirandu's daughter glowing is kind of cheesy and stupid. I don't really mind it. Actually,
I don't have a problem with her look. It's just the way she's talking.
And that's the thing is, you know, I'm listening to, and I did read some of the storyline bit with Corey Arkin where he says, you must defeat the darkness within yourselves. And I'm thinking, oh, come on. And some of the stuff here with Ramandu's daughter, I'm thinking, I don't know. I have a feeling that in the film, it won't be quite as bad, but I'm still watching this thinking.
I know. Like I said, it's like they're taking bits and pieces. So I can't base my judgment on that, but still, it annoys me.
Warrior, what do you think?
Yeah. Oh, okay. My thoughts? Okay. Yeah, for the most part, up until The White Witch, I'm fine with it, but yeah, with Ramandu's daughter, I don't have a problem with Edmund being attracted to her as well as Caspian, but I think she should have that otherworldly sort of quality that Galadriel had in Lord of the Rings, sort of like she's very different, like very beautiful and whatever, but her dialogue in this comes across a bit like some young woman you might see in the streets or something.
Yeah, that's a good.
I mean, who knew that Ramandu's daughter was a shapeshifter?
I mean, really. You know, actually, that's a good point, Warrior, because I was just thinking, now that you think of it, the dialogue does not fit the image.
Right.
True.
Tyrion, lift our spirits. Say something positive.
Yeah. Well. Well, here's the thing. So I'm listening and I actually didn't mind the part that much. So, you know, it is a big change from the story, but she has to be attractive and somebody who you want Caspian to end up with. Right.
Right.
And so I almost see it as she's not the one in charge. Almost that she's kind of a messenger, saying, "Okay, well, here's what you need to do." It's not that she's the one who's like Galadriel, who has all the answers, but you know, who has all this power. But you know, she's relatively young person who is almost kind of their Caspian and Edmund's equal in terms of stature, just from this other place. And I didn't even mind that. I think it's kind of fun that, you know, they both say no. I mean, don't change shape. I mean, that's okay. It's kind of cute, and, you know, makes for a fun little laugh line. I don't think it. I mean, there's supposed to be a romance here with Caspian falling in love with her. It's not like this is something that's, you know, blown up from some crazy dream about, you know, Caspian and Susan falling in love.
Thanks a lot. Yeah, that was a really gentle.
What am I even talking about?
Yeah, don't ever let me really invite the April Fool's jokes again.
Yeah.
No.
So, you know, I don't mind that part so much. I kind of feel like we're really going to have to see it in context. I mean, you know, give the film the benefit of the doubt here. Now, the whole thing with the White Witch, obviously, you know, yeah, it's Tilda again, and here she is. Great. Okay. Well,
money's worth out of her.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I thought Tilda made a great White Witch, and she, you know, I didn't actually mind the thing in Prince Caspian that much. I thought that whole scene was pretty well done.
Right.
I really think that where they're headed with it is that Koryakin gives them a picture of the darkness, and what he, and Edmund says it's a witch, and he says it's not just a witch. And I think what you don't see, or what we don't hear yet, is he says this is a darkness. It's all your worst dreams. It is your nightmares.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's kind of the direction, and that's why Edmund saw that. They all, you know, she's kind of part of all of their nightmares, really. I mean, I imagine in London they wake up and Tilda's there, you know. So I kind of feel like that this is a very we're just seeing a little bit of it right now. And I really think that we need to have faith that Michael Apted is a good filmmaker and is going to make the story work. You know, when I saw the little bits of – there were little bits of things in the footage that I saw in L.A. and the super trailer in earlier this year that made me so excited. About them. Just a couple of shots where the cinematography just floored me. And we haven't even seen some of that stuff yet in the trailers, but we're starting to. The shot, the beauty shot of coming around the Dawn Treader, where we see even more of it going through the waves, that kind of shot right there just is so beautiful. And I think we're going to see a lot of that in this movie.
Well, kind of, you know, to respond to something you said as far as having faith in Michael Apted being a great filmmaker, I think Michael Apted, I think he's going to do a very good job, and I get the feeling he's a very good director, a real, what some people call an actor's director. I mean, he's really just good with working with the actors and developing the characters and getting the right performances that he wants for the film. And I've told Glumpuddle, I said, you know... I think that he's probably – I think the film, just as a film, coherent piece, will probably work. I think he's actually going to do a good job there. But the thing is, I don't get the feeling that Apted has ever been that close to the script writing. And so no. I don't know. Maybe you guys, one of you guys can maybe correct me if I'm wrong. We know Adamson was very close to the script and the storylines for the previous two films, but here I'm just looking at this and I'm wondering, having the White Witch in there, I'm trying to avoid being redundant from anything I've said before. I'll just try to say briefly, I think that it, having the White Witch in there hurts it in that it creates it could create a major villain for the storyline. We don't know. I'm trying to be generous here. We don't know how much of a role really the White Witch is going to have in this story, how much of a force she's going to have. But it feels like they're detracting from the themes of Aslan's country and discovering that and the journey of you know, bringing back the Seven Lords, and furthermore, I think I'll tell you something. I texted Glumpuddle not too long ago. I texted him saying, Tilda Swinton is playing Lady in the Green Kirtle. Count on it. And he called me.
He called me.
And said, "What? Did the new piece of news come out?" I said, "No. I'm just telling you. I'm just telling you. Be ready because I think that's what's going to happen. And I'm not sure that they're actually just going to call the Lady of the Green Kirtle. I think it's.
I'm not convinced that's going to happen. But I have no doubt she's going to be in there. I think she's contractually obligated.
I don't know if she's. I don't think she's contractually obligated. But I'm thinking. I think they're trying to pull a Harry Potter on us, where you defeat the same villain in every single one in a different way."
She like suddenly going to be Tashed.
I don't want to get too much into the other films. I'm just
don't give them ideas.
Well, I just think
sorry,
it does. Well, you know, Bookworm made a really good point on the forums where he was saying that he thinks that having the White Witch does detract from Aslan's power in this, and I'm beginning to think, yeah, I mean, what's the point of defeating the witch if
she keeps coming back?
Here's the thing. I recently watched Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, and I love Tilda Swinton in Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, and I don't want to begin to dislike her. I love her as the White Witch. I just want her to stay as the White Witch in Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, and then come back in Magician's Nephew, and that's it.
Yeah.
Joe, jump in. Yeah, you haven't said anything for a little bit.
Sure. Thanks. I don't have a problem with her coming back as just temptation manifested by the Dark Island, whatever that means. But if it's her actual spirit or whatever, I'd be not too pleased. Like, if it is her spirit that's come back, then that would downplay what Aslan did for sure, and I wouldn't want that. But as just being part of the temptation, I don't really have a problem with it. But
I think it'd be cheesy. Yeah, but you're right. Yeah.
I mean, if it's not
all
the
right,
focus,
I agree.
Like, it's just a minor part of it, I'd be fine. But,
Tyrion,
yeah.
What do you think of the White Witch? I mean, maybe you have a better idea for how much of a role the White Witch will play in this than we do. But I mean.
Well, my impression has always been that it's pretty small. I mean, obviously, you know, if we go back to the leak script, you know,
like
maybe
she's rather the embodiment of evil rather than evil itself, maybe.
Well,
like she's just like kind of like the manifestation as an Edmund.
Yes.
Manifestation of evil. Okay, go ahead.
I think that our best case scenario is that she is part of Edmund's nightmare and really part of all their nightmares.
Yes.
I think that obviously if we're talking worst case scenario, she's the driving force behind the darkness and needs to be defeated once again. I think that, you know, where I would love to see them go is that this darkness is kind of driven by Tash, which I think would really set up the rest of the films really well. But I don't know if that's, you know, the direction ahead. I don't think we've gotten any indication that that's happening. But I think that I don't get the sense that Tilda is the bad guy that needs to be defeated in this film. I think we have – I don't even think she's – I really think – I thought she was just, you know, in 10 seconds of it. And apparently she kind of shows up for a flash at Corey Hawkins too, which is, I guess, okay. But I really think that it's just that it's really an issue of just like the Pevensies, just like Peter and Susan showing up in the trailer. The filmmakers are just trying to make a neat trailer here.
Well, can I – this is not – the trailer, but can I just say real quickly, I was so appalled that the White Witch was on the poster.
That is as appalling as Peter and Susan being on the poster.
Inconceivable! Well,
hey, do you guys like the new poster? Do you like the new poster? The one that we haven't seen in English yet?
Didn't it just come out in English? Did. I think
is it in English?
It's on your front page.
Well, that's embarrassing.
No, I think we have an English version of it. No, I overall, I don't know. I didn't necessarily like it. I love the Don Treader on it. I don't know. I think just some of the images, the choices of people that were kind of weird. I couldn't enjoy Tilda Swinton's face on it.
Yeah. I think they're just trying to milk her a little bit too much at our expense.
I would agree with that.
That's the feeling that I'm getting. Just kind of like how her and Prince Caspian, how they kind of played that up, even though it turned out to be fairly insignificant.
They didn't play her up as much in the advertising.
In the long run.
She wasn't on the posters. She was in a little bit of the trailers, but...
But I think they're saying, okay, well, that worked. They didn't get too upset about that, so let's take a bit more. Because she did, after all, win an Oscar. So let's just put more, because she's one of the people who is very recognizable from the Narnia films, I think. And since they're trying to reboot the franchise, in a manner of speaking, they're going to take what they can get.
I don't understand the layout of that poster, because it's just looks rushed. The positions of the characters, most of the characters, like Eustace looks like he's in a good position, and the Dawn Treader. But Aslan, they've blended away most of his mane, so he looks doesn't look powerful, and the White Witch placement doesn't look right, and all these other characters, they've used really generic photos of some of the characters, and it's like, we've seen that, show us another image, please, or something. Yeah. I don't know, well, just...
To kind of get back to the White Witch, I have to ask, because we do need to also discuss... couple other things in the trailer, like the Seven Swords. Does anyone have any last thoughts they want to throw in about the White Witch?
I am done talking about the White Witch.
I guess I just what I would have to say is that I guess I don't have a problem with the White Witch being the embodiment of evil as Edmund imagines or sees it. I mean, I always thought that when they went to the Dark Island in the book, I thought it would have made perfect sense for his nightmare to be her. I thought that made perfect sense. That's what I always assumed she was there in some form. So if she's there and getting into his head as a nightmare, because nightmares are not, they're not real, right. You know, I'm putting that in quotes.
Psychological
mess. That's how she's there. That is okay with
maybe,
me.
Maybe, except it does say something about his character development, if she's still the worst nightmare he has.
Right. But still, like, you could liken it to...
That's like the worst thing that ever happened to him, and it was really traumatic, and I mean, you can get over it, but it can still come back to haunt you. You know?
Yeah, I don't buy the character development story, or the character development thing, because there's so much that's going to happen in this between Edmund and Eustace, and Edmund and Caspian, that I think there's going to be a lot of character development right there that is going to... I think Edmund has really good stuff in store for him in this movie, and I think that just to say, well, because Tilda still bothers him, he hasn't gotten past, you know, what happened to him, you know, 5 years ago in, you know, Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, I think might be taking it a little too far.
Yeah, well, we have them yelling at him in the trailer like he's doing something stupid, and I'm I don't know. I don't even know what's going on. I don't even want to guess. At least we have a really awesome shot of Reepy Cheep immediately afterwards. But.
Yeah.
Well, let's, Tyrion, do you want to start off the discussion on the Seven Swords? What's your, what do you kind of think of this?
Oh, boy. I'm not that crazy about the storyline, obviously. I mean, you know, I was really kind of surprised at one of the images that we saw, I think from this movie storybook, where the sword from the Lone Islands, and it looked like it had been at the bottom of the ocean and it's all briny. I was kind of surprised at how it looked.
Yeah,
I remember thinking that.
That was just a real surprising look to me.
Like almost, like
yeah.
Barnacles on it or something.
As far as, you know, having to put all the swords on Aslan's table so that they can shine a bat light up into the sky. To call that one Star
Captain Girl. Planet is a hero. That's the intention I get.
I mean, it just looks awfully cheesy in the trailer, but, you know, again, you got to say, you know, it's just the trailer. I mean, you got to think that it's going to work.
It's just an impression of the movie.
Yeah, it could be.
Sorry.
It could be way worse.
I don't want to watch this movie thinking, well, it could be way worse. I don't know. That just seems like I'm setting it up for, I think, Jim Van, you go. I'll finish.
About what? I have no idea.
The Seven Swords. Seven Swords storyline.
The swords. I really
yes,
don't know. I honestly, I mean, I think it look. I think it's dumb. But, okay, but they're probably sitting down thinking, okay, they can't just go off, like, waltzing around. I mean, finding people, that's too dumb. We gotta, like, have actually physical, you know, things that they can count up and everything. So, swords, that's cool, let's do that. And I don't see the necessity for it, but, I mean, there's nothing I can do about it, so I'm just gonna have to sit back and bear with it, I suppose.
You could lead a riot.
I suppose we could.
Read the BBC. They're doing it in France. You know? Well, I think when I look at the Seven Swords, you hit on the word necessity, Jim Van, and I think you really hit the nail on the head. It is unnecessary. Glumfuddle said, okay, I know what they're trying to do. They're trying to tie every single thing together to make everything tie together as closely as possible. And I think that's kind of what they're doing here. They're trying to find something else to tie together the... I'm not sure. The thing is, you know, why do they need the Seven Swords? I mean, okay, some people say, well, it's no more cheesy than the you know, Four Thrones being thrilled.
Yes, it is.
Even if it wasn't, I think, well, what are they saving Narnia from? I mean, the White Witch? You know, I don't... We don't really know here. We kind of suspect. But I just think, I understand they're trying to make sure it's, you know, a little bit less episodic and tied together. They reduce the number of islands. We know that. But I think it's just not necessary to do that, to tie it together like in that way. I think there's enough there without that.
I mean, I suppose once the movie comes out and we see it all together as one piece, it might make sense then, but right now it really doesn't.
Yeah, but I think this I'm still holding out some possibility this might work, but I'm not really giving any hope for the White Witch. Warrior, what do you say?
Okay, I'm really not a big fan of the Seven Swords either. I don't see the parallels between that and the Four Thrones, because the Four Thrones, to me, that's... A throne represents seating, authority, power. It's the ultimate place for like someone who's ruling. So it makes sense that filling that would, you know, achieve bringing back Narnia to its rightful place or whatever with Aslan's power. But I think with the Seven Swords, swords are great, but I think it's the whole idea of Seven Swords somehow... taking back the darkness, overthrowing the darkness is a bit cliche. Like, if you're tying everything together but using strands that are cliche plot points, then I don't think it's a great idea. Like, the number seven, that's great because it's wholeness, completeness, holiness, but I don't really see the correlation of the swords, like, why that needs to be there.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I think that's interesting. In some ways, Tyrion, I kind of got the feeling you're less in favor of the Seven Swords than you are the White Witch.
You know, I think that...
Or a little less unhappy about it.
Yeah, I do think, yeah, that's I probably do feel that way. I think that, I think we're seeing more of a departure from the storyline, the book storyline with the Seven Swords than we did with the Witch.
I would agree with that to a point.
What I keep hearing is that there's nothing that's been taken away from the story. Nothing that's critical to the story that's been taken away. It's just some things that have been added to make it a bit more cinematic. So
So you think that the emphasis on discovering Aslan's country, on righting the wrong that Miraz did by sending off these men, and that it's a more quest on nobility less than survival, you think that those will not be lost even if other things are added? Is that what you're saying?
I think that those will be present. I don't think those are going to be the primary themes, but I do think those are going to be present in the film. And I also think that they're something that's been brought out more in the film than probably it was in the book, although it was certainly present in the book, is this theme of redemption and temptation. And really, really overcoming temptation, where everybody in the book is tempted in big ways. Lucy and I guess maybe not Edmund, since he didn't really do anything in the book. But everybody in the book has their own temptations that they have to overcome. And I think that that's what the script writers have done, is they've just kind of brought that more to the forefront and made that kind of the dominant theme in the story, which maybe it wasn't the dominant theme in the book, but I'm okay with that, since it's a book theme that's become the dominant theme.
Unlike the Seven Swords. Hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
I might have to have on here, I was chatting with about recently, I might have to have Michael Ward on the podcast.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Come on.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's, it was sort of funny. He, I think at one point when I posted it on my Facebook, the first trailer on my Facebook, and Glumpuddle posted immediately afterwards with this, saying no, runs and bashes his head against the wall. And then Michael Ward copied and pasted and posted the same thing. But, well, that's interesting. I don't have nearly as problem with the Seven Swords as I do the White Witch. I see the White Witch as potentially disastrous.
Potentially,
I see Right, but I see the Seven Swords, I don't see them as disastrous. I see the Seven Swords as
cutting edge.
Very annoying,
right,
and
exactly.
Unnecessary.
And like I said, I don't have a problem with Witch to a point. As long as if it's only her as the, just like a representation of evil, as long as she's not the puppet master, that's okay. As long as she's like a dream, that's okay. But if she's the puppet master who's doing all this bad stuff from beyond, that's a big problem. And that is
I would totally agree with you there.
Agreed. Agreed.
Yep.
Okay. So we have some kind of a consensus, although I don't know how happy I am still with her being in there at all.
It's just in his nightmare.
I'll just have to make an evaluation on the finished product. Well, at some point here, we need to just kind of discuss our overall thoughts. But briefly, does anyone want to give a quick shout out to everyone? Just kind of summarize quickly what they think of the dragon and the serpent.
Who goes? Oh, okay, Jim Fan first.
Oh, yay. Didn't really get to see a lot of the dragon. He looks kind of wonky in the poster, so I don't really know. The serpent looks kind of interesting.
Wonky.
Looks like something from Doctor Who.
Add that to my vocabulary list.
Doctor.
Yeah, I didn't really. You don't really see much of them, but so far so good, I guess. I think it's just a bad angle in the poster, because the poster does not look good at all. The dragon in the poster.
Yeah, the dragon. Okay, thank goodness. In the poster, it looked like some weird flying pig thing.
A flying pig?
So
I guess he kind of did in the poster.
In the trailer, it's an improvement, but he still looks a bit too friendly, Barbie fairy tale sort of ish inspiration. Like, I think if he's meant to be representative of personal sin and all the disagreeable parts of being, Eustace, then he should be a bit more ugly. And Yeah, I'm not sure. Other than that, not really much to say about the dragon. But the serpent I really like, even if it is quite different from what I would have thought. Like, in the book, it follows some of the inspiration in the book. It doesn't have the horse head like it says in the book, but it has the clam shells on it and all these jagged teeth like it's something from the deep seas. It's a bit more fish-like than I would have thought, but I'm fine with the serpent. I just hope it's not some epic battle scene and that Eustace doesn't have to earn his undragoning, because that would totally ruin the theme of that element of the book, I think, that really needs to be kept.
Yeah, I'm just confused by the fact that the dragon... I mean, Eustace is still a dragon. Apparently, when he's on court, when they're on Ramandu's island, and he's fighting the sea serpent, and the sea serpent's connected with the Dark Island now, and it's really hard for me to see why and how they're connecting everything, but I'm looking at a shot right now on the trailer of right before Eustace as a dragon blows fire into the serpent's face, and it's kind of a silhouette of his face, and there he looks, you know, pretty ugly and ferocious.
So yes,
I kind of like the Eustace dragon, but I am surprised by the sea serpent, and I don't know, it might be okay. I guess I don't. Maybe it's because of all these other hideous sins that I'm not much bothered by it. Tyrion, little shout out to the sea serpent.
You know, I kind of feel like the dragon is such an iconic character, and they keep expecting that our first shot of Eustace would just be this amazing, like the first shot of Aslan in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, that was just, you know, such an exciting thing. And I saw him flying along, and I thought, oh, hey, there's a dragon, there's Eustace. Kind of ho-hum. And I think it's that we just see him for a split second, and we're used to seeing dragons in movies. And so I thought it was okay. I mean, I think we're going to need to see a lot more before we can really know for sure. I'm sure they'll do a decent job on it. I think in the sea serpent looks pretty hideous and pretty horrible and pretty scary. I like that Eustace blows fire in his face and seems to be valiant, and that's cool. I also agree that it's important that he doesn't earn his redemption by, you know, battling the dragon or battling the sea serpent. I think that in the film or in the book, Eustace's undragoning is such a intensely spiritual and emotional thing. And it's just, you know, one of, I'm sure, all of our favorite parts of the Chronicles. So I think it's going to be hard if that's not done in the same way, which it doesn't sound like it will be. So I think that you know, I don't know. It's probably too early to say whether it's going to be a disappointment or not, but from what we know, it doesn't sound like he's undragoned in the same way.
Word of mouth on what people think of the dragon has been pretty good. I mean, just from what people are saying about when they see the dragon, it sounds really good when they see a lot of the finished product. So I'm really optimistic about the Eustace dragon.
It's interesting that the dragon was one of the first things we ever saw of Don Treader way back in the Prince Caspian DVD. And that's the last thing that's really being revealed to us. I mean, we've really seen very little of him. We've never really got a good shot of him. And I don't think we will, really, until, like, right up until the movie comes out. So I think that's interesting. Probably. That's, like, that's their weenie that they're holding on to. It's like, okay, you had lions and witches and the evil kings and stuff, but we got a dragon, and we're going to milk that problem.
Yeah. Well, we could make this an hour and a half long podcast easily. It would not be that difficult, but for the sake of time, and I'm going to try to. How about each of you take 1 to 2 minutes, sum up your expectations for the film right now, and how you're going. how right now you think you'll be approaching it as you go into the theater to see it for the first time. And Warrior, why don't we start with you?
Okay. I'm still pretty optimistic about it being a good movie as for being a good adaptation. Oh, that word is... I'm really having to separate the book and the movie at this stage. We haven't seen it, but at this stage, yeah, separating the two different mediums is probably the best way to go for me. But, yeah, I'm still pretty optimistic about it. Just going in with different expectations about it to what I would have had before. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Okay, so more optimistic than pessimistic.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay, Jim Van, how about you?
I haven't really changed my opinion much since we last talked. I have to...
Well, remind us all.
It was undecided. It was completely neutral.
Okay.
I would have to say I do agree with Warrior that I think any hope in me that this movie will be a quote-unquote faithful adaptation has completely died. I don't think... I think the movie and the book will be two different things. I have absolutely no doubt that this is going to be a good movie. I think it's going to do well in the box office. I think people are going to like it. And I think they will make Silver Chair. And for the movie.
But did you say you think your hope of it being a good adaptation has died?
More or less.
Wow, okay.
It could still be redeemed, but I don't think it's really going to be much like the book at all. Now, that could end up being a good thing. Prince Caspian wasn't really much like the book, and that ended out okay. But we've seen a lot more drastic changes with Don Cheadle, so I really don't know. I think I will have to go into the theater with really no expectations, really, and just take it for what it is. And if I think it falls in more to the book, at you know, when we see it as a complete film, it could very well end up jiving with the book very well. You know, the theme, the feel of it could end up being the same. But right now, I don't get that. So I think it will be a good film, but I don't really think it's going to be a very good adaptation.
Tyrion, your expectations.
Well, you know, I'm an optimist. I'm really excited about it. I think the visuals that we've seen so far are really, really exciting. The scenes on the Dawn Treader are just amazing. I think the subplots that have been added will add to it. I'm hopeful that care has been taken toward the end of the film so that it's not going to end up being feel like a foreign kind of thing to people who love the book. So I would say at this point, I'm going to go into the movie with high expectations. I'm really excited to see it. I mean, I would rather have high expectations and be disappointed than you know, have low expectations and be pleasantly surprised. But I do think that it's going to be. I would go so far as to say that it'll be a great film and a good adaptation. How about that?
Okay. Well, to balance all that optimism, I am not in despair, but
but
I think the film, like you, Jim Fan, I've pretty much given up hope that this will be a good adaptation. I have, and I almost don't want it to be a good film if it's so divorced from the book. But then I have seen some films. I don't remember when it was made. There is a film of The Secret Garden that is very different from the book.
I think I know what you're talking about.
But it stands alone as a very good film. So I understand that there are some times where it can work as a film. But looking at just the storyline and certain aspects of how they're connecting things, and it just seem contrived and cheesy to me. I'm not even sure it The only thing that really gives me confidence that the film will work as a film by itself is the fact that I think Michael Apted's a good director, and a lot of people, I'm hearing good things about the film from people who are not fans of the book. I don't think that I'm going to really love the film at all. I don't think I'm really going to. I think I'm going to see more negative than positive. I'll say this. I'll kind of summarize it like this. I don't think, if I do enjoy parts of the film, I don't think I'm going to enjoy the film overall for the same reasons I enjoyed the book. I think that if I do enjoy the film, it will be for very different reasons. And I almost am at the point of saying I'm not sure I want to see this done to my favorite piece of children's literature, if it's going to be that different. So on one hand, so going into the theater, I have very low expectations, so I might be somewhat pleasantly surprised. However, I also don't want to walk in and say, oh, it wasn't a complete disaster, and kind of give it a thumbs up because it wasn't terrible. I still want to hold it to a high standard of, okay, how does it compare to The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, and Prince Caspian as an adaptation? And I actually think, Jim Fan, that the Prince Caspian, the film, I think in many ways did capture the sense of the book. Certainly the martial war presence that the book had. And it's, I mean, if there's more of the, you know, fighting and the battles and the mud and filth of, you know, the war camps in Prince Caspian than any other of the Narnia books. And so I think in that regard, the film captured it. Here, I'm not sure that I'm going to see the same excitement of discovering Aslan's country and voyaging into the unknown and the sense of adventure that Rippy Cheap received. I don't think I'm going to see that. Maybe I've mellowed to a bit where I might be able to enjoy the film as a film, but I think the fact that it's my favorite Narnia book might prevent that. Maybe it didn't so much with Prince Caspian, because that's my least favorite Narnia book. I don't dislike the book, but it's not, it doesn't grab my soul like
we had a lot more leeway, a lot more forgiveness.
I did give a lot more forgiveness to Prince Caspian. Part of it was because I knew it had to be changed. You know, the story structure just didn't really work so well for film. So I am not at this point, I am expecting to walk out of the theater disliking it more than liking it.
So you shouldn't expect that, though. You're setting yourself up for failure. Don't expect anything.
But, what do you mean? I'm setting myself up for failure. Tyrion here, he's expecting. he's gonna. You know, he's setting himself up for. I mean, I don't know how I'm setting myself up for failure. I'd be setting myself up for failure if I thought it was gonna be a perfect film.
If you look for the bad of things, you are gonna find them. And if you go in knowing that you're gonna hate it, you will hate it.
Not necessarily. That's not true.
More or less.
No, it's not. I've watched other films where I thought for sure I would hate the film, and I was pleasantly surprised. I can watch films expecting to really dislike them. I've watched films before expecting to really dislike them, and I really do like them. So.
But you were very begrudging about them. Admit it.
No.
But I've been on it, yeah.
I'm going to have to – I will have to say, is it a good film? Is it a good adaptation? And, you know, of course I'll be looking at, is it a good, does it work as a film? Because that's one of the, you know, that's something I love that, you know, Glumpuddle has really articulated is, if it's going to be a good adaptation, if you take a great book and you make a film, even if it has every word of dialogue and every scene and every little detail in the film, if it doesn't work as a film, it's not a good adaptation. So I do look for, is it working as a film? You know, does it have that quality to it? So, you know, we'll just find out. I'm not a tabula rasa blank slate walking in like you are. Well, maybe we shouldn't have ended with me. Maybe we should have ended with Tyrion, so this would be a more upbeat ending to the podcast.
Give us a pep talk. Come on, encourage us.
Tyrion, this has been a blast. Thank you so much for coming on here.
Oh, this has been really fun. Well, don't let me go another 5 years without coming around to get on the podcast.
You know, you guys realize that this podcast has been going, I think January 1st, 2006 was the very first episode. And it's almost January 2011. Wow. And I think we are, I'm not aware of another Narnia podcast online at all. If there are, maybe there's one or two that I've found, but I don't think they're still running.
Kudos to us.
I know Narnia Fans does one, but I don't think they've done one in a while. So,
not for a couple of years, I don't think.
Well, cheers to you, really, and for keeping it going.
Well, I have a great group of people, and you guys are fantastic. It's a lot of fun. Someday, my dream, actually, one of my dreams was to have Tyrion on. We've done that. We've accomplished it. One of my next dreams is to get a podcast episode with people on three continents simultaneously. We're doing two continents right now. We have North America, we have Australia, but we need to have Europe on here as well, because Jintz, she's been on here.
I thought you had Jintz. Didn't you have Jintz with Warrior one time? I thought you did.
No, I don't think we ever did, because it's so tricky with all the time. The time zones are just insane when you try to do that, because right now it would be around 5 in the morning for Jintz. So, well.
Yeah, Luke.
This has been fun, and you know, there are aspects of this film, walking in, I know I'm going to love Will Poulter, and frankly, he's enough for me to see this film. I'll be perfectly honest. I told my friend, I'm going to go see this film for Will Poulter, you know. And I probably will see it multiple times.
I said it from day one, I'll say it again, I think he's the perfect Eustace. He's my Eustace. He's how I always see Eustace.
I think he might be to Eustace what Georgie was to Lucy.
Yeah.
Because, saw bits of Georgie, right around the same time I read the books for the first time, so I never really got distinction between the two. I mean, Lucy has always been Georgie for me, more or less. But Eustace, I never saw Will Poulter before I read the books, obviously. I read the books long before he was cast. But then when he was cast, I was like, that is Eustace.
Well, we'll see. Maybe, if I were to take every single aspect of The Lord of the Rings that was cheesy and put it in a trailer, maybe we would have had something similar. I don't know. Well, if anyone of you listening want to email your love or hate mail to us, you can email me at rillian@narniweb.com, tyrion@narniweb.com, webmaster@spareoom.net, and Warrior, do you have a pithy email address?
tintinrules, tintinrulz @yahoo.com.au.
There you go. And if you want me to respond to a question about the... sometime we'll try to do another mailbag on here. They're kind of... they're kind of fun, but we haven't done one in a while where we answer questions on the podcast.
Send me an email. I've never gotten an email, guys. I would love to get an email.
Really? I get emails.
Yeah. I never get emails. Maybe it's my lack of a narniweb.com address or something.
Maybe that's it. I don't know. You got
to create
an email. Well,
Jim Pan, maybe we'll have to hook you and Warrior up.
We'll have to do that. To talk to the real webmaster.
You're the one with the power, Tyrion. I could really use one.
Thank you so much, guys. This was fantastic.
Thanks,
and quick, someone on Narnia Web, who's the, what's the countdown? Hmm. Present countdown. As of this recording.
Everybody races.
Well, it'll be different for Warrior.
56 days for me.
56 days for me, too.
Yeah, I have 56 days.
Almost 55, because it's almost midnight where I am.
Yeah, so...
It's on the main page, isn't it, somewhere?
It's on the main page, yeah.
I've forgotten.
Yeah, it's on the main page.
That's less than 2 months, people. That's less than 2 months.
I know. I cannot believe it.
I know. It's going to be crazy. I mean, November's
going
to go by so quick.
Poor Warrior. It's on the
it's
front
at the
page.
It's the bottom of the
scroll
page.
Down.
Scroll down.
Oh, I'm okay. Just... okay.
It's the future for Warrior, so he's a little bit closer. Wait, Warrior, when does it come out for you?
Which one?
The film. Does it come out,
I believe it's the 11th of December or something.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, that's not bad. Well, guys, this has been great. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Tyrion. Thank you, Warrior. Thank you, Jim Fan.
Thank you, everyone. Great to talk.
Thank you. Woo! Alrighty. Well, that was lots of fun.
Oh, sorry about that, dude.